Good evening, and welcome to this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, and the show you are hearing this evening was recorded live on April 13th, 2005, at the 14th Annual Awards Dinner of Death Penalty Focus. Death Penalty Focus is this nation's largest membership-based organization working to abolish capital punishment in the United States. This year's Death Penalty Focus Dinner takes place at a time of growing opposition to state-sanctioned murder. Indeed, a recent Gallup poll shows that public support for the death penalty has dropped to 50% from a high of 84% back in the late 80s. As actor and producer Mike Farrell, the president of Death Penalty Focus, says, more and more people recognize that the death penalty is unfair, unjust, and unnecessary. It's time for the U.S. to rejoin the community of civilized nations and outlaw state killing. Well, evidence of this dwindling support for the death penalty is everywhere. New York State has just become the first state to do away with the death penalty since capital punishment returned to the criminal justice system in the mid-1970s. And New Mexico, Connecticut, Illinois, and Kansas are all re-examining their death penalty systems as well. So is our own state of California, where the state Senate has established a commission to study the death penalty in the state as it was studied in Illinois. Indeed, already a preliminary study of California's death penalty system found at least 80 examples of problems similar to those found in the Illinois death penalty system. And of course, in recent weeks, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the execution of those who committed their crime before the 18th birthday to be unconstitutional. Over 500 people are expected at the dinner here tonight, and there would be far more if the room would hold more. It is sold out at the Fairmont Miramar Hotel in Santa Monica. And this is a far cry from the less than 50 people that showed up for Death Penalty Focus's first dinner 14 years ago. And this year, as they do each year, Death Penalty Focus will be giving out some awards to individuals whose work on behalf of ending the death penalty was deemed exemplary. This year's honorees are Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts, who will receive the Death Penalty Focus 2005 Abolitionist Award for his lifelong opposition to state killing at home and abroad. Sister Held Prejean, the author of Dead Man Walking and The Death of Innocence, receives the Acts of Courage Award. Actors Bradley Whitford of The West Wing and Jane Kaczmarek of Malcolm in the Middle are being honored for their courageous public advocacy for human rights and opposition to the use of capital punishment. Deborah and Andy Rappaport are being honored tonight for their support of many progressive causes and of political candidates, and they oppose the death penalty. And finally, Bishop Henry Willetson, Sr. He is the presiding prelate of the 9th District of the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church, and he will receive Death Penalty Focus's 2005 Humanitarian Award. The MC for tonight's show is none other than the host of A&E's very popular American Justice and Cold Case Files. Bill Curtis is his name. He will serve as Master of Ceremonies, as I say, at tonight's dinner. And Mr. Curtis's own journey to this position is an interesting one. For most of his life, Bill Curtis supported the death penalty. And if I get a chance to talk to him a little later, and I expect to, we'll find out what has changed his mind and, of course, the minds of so many other Americans as well. Well, the pre-dinner reception is now underway, and I expect to be able to interview some of tonight's honorees and also some of the principals of the Death Penalty Focus organization. Well, let's get started by talking with our honorees tonight, by talking first with one of the honorees, Bishop Henry Williamson, Sr. He is the presiding prelate of the 9th District of the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church. And tonight he's going to be receiving the Death Penalty Focus 2005 Humanitarian Award. Bishop Williamson, welcome to the show.
Good to be here with you.
I was just listening to Mike Farrell and others talking about we're at a time where there seems to be an ascendancy of the right, of the more conservative forces in the country. And yet at the same time that's happening, we learned from the public opinion polls of just last week that support for the death penalty is way down, no more than 50% at this point. It had been 15 or 20 points, sometimes 30 points higher in recent years. How do you explain that apparent dichotomy? On the one hand, there does seem to be a certain conservativeness in the country, at least at the last election that seemed to be the case. But yet at the same time, the death penalty, which has often been something that we associate as a conservative issue, has been losing ground, and there's really a sea change in favor of abolishing it. Seems contradictory, or is it?
Well, it isn't, it isn't. I think, first of all, most Americans are beginning to realize that the death penalty is not eradicating crime. I think that also those who have been silent are beginning to speak up. I represent the Methodist Church, and we have, from our inception in our social creed, been unalterably opposed to the death penalty. What we've not done is taken the kind of action that death penalty focus has. That means to aggressively make sure that our social creed becomes indeed our public policy. I think we're realizing now that we must speak up, speak out, stand up, that those who propose to support life, that are pro-life, really are not pro-life, they're anti-life. We've seen it in the case of the young woman in Florida recently who lost her life, and yet Reverend Jackson, who is often described as one on the left, was there to do the right thing. I think we have to be a voice. I think we have to come together and make a real difference, and I think people are realizing the need to speak up and not let just one voice speak for God. There are a number of voices that speak for God. A lot of times we celebrated the Pope's homegoing, and certainly for 1 billion people around the world who affiliate themselves with the Catholic Church, they're not so familiar with his position in terms of against the death penalty. As a matter of fact, he was one who went to the jail cell of the man who tried to take his life.
That's right.
And so I think those moral principles and examples say to people that the dignity and worth of every human being is so very important that we must remove ourselves from the insanity of being a society that kills. Mm-hmm. We look at the other highly industrialized nations of the world who have removed this awful stigma from their society. We find that removing that stigma, removing guns, in fact, allow for life to become sacred. And to be sacred means we must have public policy that speaks to that particular issue. So I'm glad that for once, voices that once were silent are now speaking up, and public opinion is changing. And so if we continue in that direction, I'm unalterably opposed to it as my denomination, but we now must take and make public policy a part of our creed, must become our deed. As our creed becomes our deed, we'll be able to move forward.
Yeah, you've just made a number of interesting points I'd like to follow up on with you, if I could briefly. For one thing, you pointed out the fact that during the recent Terri Schiavo controversy, a lot of those more quote-unquote conservative forces in the country who spoke about the sanctity of life in connection with her have now been honest enough to say, well, I'm thinking of Rick Santorum, for example, and some others, have now been honest enough to say, well, I guess then we ought to take a look at the death penalty if we're talking about the sanctity of life, oughtn't we? And the other thing that you said that interests me is the question of whether the church has as its credo opposition to the death penalty, but what action it takes on behalf of it. And that the Zogby poll, which just came out, showed that among religious groups in the country, the religious group that has the lowest amount of support for the death penalty was the Catholic and the Catholic Church. And Sister Prejean, who I was talking to a little earlier, made the point that the Pope being kind of an activist on this issue, you mentioned the Pope even going to the jail cell, the man who tried to kill him, the bishops taking the strong stand that they've taken. What would you like to see your own church do, perhaps, that they haven't yet done that might make that creed an action, as you put it, the deed itself?
Well, we're about 800,000 people and 3,000 congregations. What I like to see us do is begin a petition drive in each one of the states and then allow for us to lobby effectively the state, governor, legislative body. I like to see us do that, of course, then to extend that to the senators from each state, the two senators from each state, the representatives in the Congress of the United States and the Senate, to begin to say to them, our votes make a difference. And we feel that it's time for us to move on and to move our nation forward, that we are stuck in the dark ages, and we're going to have to be the ones that move them forward. So this petition drive should be, first of all, coordinated across religious lines, denominational lines, so that Protestant, Jew, and Catholic who feel strongly about this issue of being pro-life against the death penalty, realizing that many innocent people's lives have already been lost. We recently celebrated the homegoing of a noted attorney, Attorney Johnny Cochran,
yes,
who spent 27 years defending Geronimo Pratt. We found later that Geronimo Pratt was innocent.
Was innocent.
And so had the death penalty been carried out against that gentleman, the state would have been guilty of murder.
Yes,
and so therefore, I think that it's time for us then to move forward. We're finding out every day from DNA testing that many men and women off death row. Tonight at this wonderful affair, mm-hmm. we meet men whose lives would have been taken had there not been DNA testing, had there not been a delay, had there not been persons who continuously argued against the death penalty, so much so that they delayed it until the evidence could appear. I think now we must then be proactive in making sure that our churches then must take a step to influence public policy and to do that quickly.
Now, this petition drive that you referenced, this is an idea of yours? Is it a plan? Is it something that is likely to come about?
It is going to happen in the 10-state area over which, on the western United States, I preside.
Oh, good. Yes.
Also, because I am the social justice chairperson for my denomination, we'll have a meeting in May, and once I present this idea to the bishops, I'm hopeful that it will be a united effort. We then will go to the World Methodist Council as well as there are more than 60 million Methodists. So therefore, if we can embrace this as a Methodist denomination and then lobby with our Baptists and others, we have a significant movement. I think the African American church particularly, because those who die disproportionately are the black, the brown,
right.
and the poor.
That's right.
So we've got to become advocates in this area just as we are for civil rights, just as we've been now for adequate health care in our community. We must take a strong stand.
And would you agree, I was saying this to Mike Farrell earlier and to some others, that most politicians, there are exceptions, but most of the politicians, elected officials in this country, have been reticent to champion abolition of the death penalty, even if they themselves personally are in favor of that. Now that we see that public sentiment is turned against the death penalty to the extent that it has, do you think the combination of that and a more activist church on this issue might give more backbone, perhaps, to some of these political leaders so that they could play a leadership role and be willing to speak out against the death penalty? Because they haven't really been that willing to do so far.
There's an old story that says, by a politician who says, I'm the leader, there goes the people, let me get out in front of them.
Yes.
I think we need a movement of the people at the grassroots level to really understand this issue, and I think our politicians will come around. I remember back in the 60s when Dr. King began to voice about Vietnam.
That's right.
And it was very, first of all, unpopular by him, by others, but as he continued to speak, he made sense. It became a national, then international issue. We now know some 40 years later that Dr. King was right and government was wrong. Politicians were wrong. There have been books written by politicians who said we were wrong. So therefore, I think we have to take the point. We have to have the courage of our conviction to stand and to stand alone. But I think we got to understand that there will be a growing, swelling crowd and tide that will rise to the top that will allow for us to move forward mm-hmm. with this particular issue. Mm-hmm. We are the moral voice. We are the conscience. I think it's unfair for us to remain silent as right-wing people use God
yes.
to approve death. The same God who said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, did not rise from the grave and take vengeance mm-hmm. on those who killed him, but in fact had mercy toward them and in fact did everything he could to redeem them. So the religious voice of those who are left, who I think are not necessarily left, but who are really in the center of what humanity, what God speaks to, thou shalt not kill. Mm-hmm. The full implication of that must be public policy as well. And then we find out we can, in fact, be redemptive if we move forward. We have to be the voice for the voices, even the voices politicians, to know that we can move forward. When that begins to happen, then others, even those so-called on the right, will join us.
Then they'll follow and go running ahead of the crowd.
Exactly right.
Well, Bishop, I thank you so much. I thank you for your work, and I really wish you well with your petition effort that you're talking about. We'll follow that, and as that begins to take hold, we'll let our listeners at KPFK know about that and perhaps how they can help with the petition drive themselves, since I know that many of our listeners, of course, support abolition of the death penalty. So congratulations on your honor tonight. I'll let you go back and eat your dinner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Bishop Henry Williamson, Sr. He is the presiding prelate of the 9th District of the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church. And as I say, tonight he is receiving the Death Penalty Focus 2005 Humanitarian Award. Thank you again so much, Bishop. This is KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. You're listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, and tonight we're recording live in the lobby of the Fairmont Miramar Hotel in Santa Monica at the 14th Annual Awards Dinner of Death Penalty Focus. And now I'm very pleased to be talking to a gentleman who I've not met before. His name is Lawrence C. Marshall. He's professor of law and David and Stephanie Mills director of clinical education at Stanford Law School. Good evening, but I understand that before your present employment, you were the director of the Center for Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University. And I'm informed as well that your work in that regard was part of the inspiration for Governor Ryan taking the action he took in Illinois. Is that correct?
Yeah, at the Center on Wrongful Convictions, we were blessed to have been involved in more than a dozen of the Illinois cases in which men had been sentenced to death for crimes that it turned out they simply did not commit. And that fact, though, that spate of cases ultimately led Governor Ryan first to a moratorium on the death penalty, and then ultimately to the decision to commute the sentences, and we were very privileged to be able to play a significant role in that.
Mm-hmm. A recent Gallup poll just came out, I can't remember how many days ago now, but quite recently, along with a Zogby poll. And the interesting thing about it was it showed that support for the death penalty has declined to about 50% even in this country now. It had been as high as 80-some percent about 10, 15 years ago. To what do you attribute that fact that there seems to be now more of a willingness of the American people who for so long clung to the death penalty to give it up?
Yeah, there's no question that there's a trend of diminution in support. And I believe it grows in large part out of the revelations about innocent people being convicted. I think folks have come to understand that a system is making such profound errors on the question of guilt and innocence is not a system that can be trusted with the question of who should live and who should die, even among those who were undeniably guilty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about 50% support for the death penalty. In reality, it's much weaker than that.
Really?
Because when you ask the question the right way, which is, do you support the death penalty knowing about the possibility of life without parole, then a great majority of Americans say, no, I don't. I don't support the death penalty. Now, it seems to me that's the relevant inquiry, because mm-hmm. we do have the possibility of life without parole. Mm-hmm. It would be as if we went and asked people, do you support the death penalty when we have no prisons? And of course, 99% of people would say we do. But we have prisons, just as we have life without parole. Mm-hmm. So when the question is asked in a factual manner, given the realities, overwhelming majority say, no, I don't support the death penalty under those circumstances.
As a large part, you're mentioning the notion of people who, of course, who've been convicted, in some cases executed. Later we find out they're innocent. So the growth of DNA and other scientific advancements, has that helped the cause greatly, do you think?
Well, DNA has played a role, but it's overestimated. The fact is, maybe around 10% of the exonerations off of death row have involved DNA. Hmm. DNA, unfortunately, is not available in most cases. In most cases, the perpetrator has not left any biological evidence that's susceptible of forensic testing. So what we need to do in terms of DNA is to learn the lessons that DNA can show us in those cases which are susceptible to DNA testing. Mm-hmm. So DNA shows us about the fallibility of eyewitness identification. DNA shows us about the risk of false confessions. DNA shows us about the risk of jailhouse informants lying. It shows us the risk of junk science in other areas. We need to take those lessons and apply them across the board. More and more people are saying, whoa, those lessons convince me that the death penalty is off the table. Mm-hmm. We have to have a prison system, yes, even if we know we're going to have errors. We don't have to have a death penalty knowing what we do about the risk of errors.
For a long time in American politics, it's the courageous politician that's willing to wear openly on his sleeve or her sleeve the fact that they are opposed to the death penalty. My experience is that that hasn't changed nearly as much as public opinion about the death penalty itself has changed. Your comment on that?
Well, I think that's right on the one hand. On the other hand, do not underestimate the extent to which political actors are beginning to understand that this is a safe issue. For years and years in Illinois and nationally, I would speak to legislators who would put their arm around me and say, look, Larry, you know, between you and me, I think this is a ridiculous waste of resources and money and energy. I don't like the death penalty, but I can't say that or the earth will open up and swallow me politically. And I think that what's happened recently, for example, with Governor Ryan, who, for all of the troubles he's had in Illinois, was met with great support for his positions on the death penalty. What's happened is more and more politicians have come to recognize that the body politic will accept their heartfelt angst over this issue. So even this past couple of weeks, Republican senators like Rick Santorum, Senator Brownback from Kansas, have begun to question the death penalty as somehow inconsistent with the culture of life that they espouse,
in
cases like Terri Schiavo and the abortion cases. So I think a very strange coalition is beginning to build. It's a coalition that, of course, has been there for a while, given the Catholic Church's position with respect to the culture of life. But I think we're seeing folks from very different walks of life. So you have sort of the progressive community, which has consistently understood this point. You now have the religious right, at least those who are consistent about a certain view of life, who are coming to this. And then you also have the libertarians, who are saying, well, wait a minute, we're dubious about big government. We don't trust government. Why should we trust government to go ahead and kill? So more and more libertarians are coming around to saying, this is just a big government program that doesn't work so well.
Do you think the action that New York State has just been taking is consistent with what you, is a sort of an outgrowth of what you've just been talking about?
No question about it. I mean, this what happened this week in New York with the legislature turning back the effort to continue the death penalty there is striking. Just 10 years ago, the support in New York was overwhelming. And yet the legislatures come in and they say, look, we don't think that the people of New York want this anymore. They have, their minds have been changed because of the realization of the risk of error in these cases. So that's Exhibit A at the moment, or perhaps Illinois is Exhibit A. New York is now Exhibit B, and throughout the country.
New Mexico, I know a number of other states.
New Mexico, North Carolina, many states are beginning to look at this hard, and I think clearly we're on the road ultimately toward abolition.
Well, and California, I want to ask you one last point about California. You're here in California now, and the Senate has appointed a commission to, similar to, I guess, what was appointed in Illinois. Preliminary studies already showed that the California system suffers from many of the same pitfalls of the Illinois system. Do you have high hopes for that commission? Is it a good commission? Is it is its membership yet chosen? I frankly am not aware.
Yeah, the membership has been chosen, and I'm very confident that any commission that looks at these facts with an open mind and a willingness to have minds changed will come to positions that call into question the current practices. You know, I often say that in the past 15 years, I've spoken to tens of thousands of people about the death penalty, and so many have come up to me and told me that although they used to support the death penalty, or maybe still do in theory, the practical realizations about how arbitrary it is and how error-prone it is have led them to reject it. I've not met a single person in that time who has said, you know what, I used to support the death penalty. I used to have questions about the death penalty because I wasn't sure about how unfair and accurate it was. But the more I learn about it, the more confident I am that it's fair and accurate. And I submit that the test of any public policy is that question. What is the impact of light? What is the impact of information? This is a subject where when people learn about it, they turn away in droves.
All right.
And that leads me to be very confident about the future.
Excellent. And I want to thank you for joining us tonight here on the Lawyers Guild Show. And we're happy you're in our state.
Well, thank you so much.
Letting your talents here. We've been talking with Lawrence C. Marshall. He's professor of law, and David and Stephanie Mills, director of clinical education at Stanford Law School, and former director of the Center for Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University.
Thanks.
And this is KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM indeed here in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. You're listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, and tonight we're recording live and from the lobby of the Fairmont Miramar Hotel in Santa Monica, where the 14th Annual Awards Dinner of Death Penalty Focus is taking place. Death Penalty Focus is the largest membership-based advocacy group against capital punishment in the country. And we'll be talking in the course of the evening with a number of the principals in that organization, as well as some of tonight's honorees. And now we're joined by the president of Death Penalty Focus, which I've already identified, Mike, as the largest membership-based anti-death penalty group in the country, I think.
I think that's correct.
I'm talking with Mike Farrell. This is your 14th annual awards dinner. I think you've told me on previous occasions that you had about 40 or 50 people at your first dinner. Is that right?
Yes. And the first dinner, we took some years to collect the 40 to 50 people before we could have it.
That's right. And you're at this hotel now. It's sold out tonight.
That's right.
You could have sold 200 or 300 more tickets.
I think so.
But you're honoring the labor boycott of some of the hotels in Los Angeles, which is right. Why you're here at the Miramar tonight. What do you think accounts for the fact that the latest public opinion poll shows we're at 50% now support for death penalty focus? And as Professor Marshall pointed out a minute ago, if you ask the question about life without parole, it even goes lower than that. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, we were at 70 and 80%. What do you think is most responsible for that sea change in American attitude?
Well, I think, Jim, that it's a number of things, but I credit it to the fundamental fairness of the American people when they understand the reality. For many years, the politicians wanted it to be an issue of the abstract concept of life.
This is Jesse Jackson interviewing Mike Farrell for me. Reverend, we'll talk to you later.
Nice to see you, Reverend. It was, an eye for an eye.
Yeah.
People understood an eye for an eye because there's a sort of clarity about that.
Sort of a simple clarity.
Yes, exactly. But and so the concept was that we needed this thing, and the politicians kept telling people we needed this thing, and they made people afraid, and they played on people's fears, and I think the belief was that the system worked.
Yes.
What we have demonstrated over the years that we've been working on this to people is that the system simply does not work.
And that gets back to your fairness point. Once American people have to face that fact, that it's an imperfect system that executes innocent people,
right,
that basic fairness that you're talking about comes to the fore.
That's right. I think people will not tolerate
Look what we've had. We just had New York State.
That's right.
Be the first state, I guess, since the mid-70s to not go back to the death penalty system.
Right.
We've got a commission here in California, which is going to study as the Illinois system did. You've got to be awfully encouraged.
We are, very much so. This is, it feels as though the pendulum is beginning to swing our way, and that I think the polls reflect it. I think, as you've said, the situation in New York reflects it. But generally speaking, this tells us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer a subject that can't be discussed in polite company.
That's right.
And it feels now that there is a kind of what's the computer term? A default consideration toward the reality that there's something terribly wrong.
You think that's likely to give perhaps the politicians who in the past might in their heart of hearts been against the death penalty, been afraid to say so?
Oh, absolutely.
Think it might give them a little backbone so they could perhaps do some leadership action.
Sure. I think that's right. I mean, I think they've been browbeaten and frightened. And,
themselves.
And I must say, let's call it what it is. They have been cowardly. They were afraid they'd lose their positions. They were afraid they'd lose their support. They were afraid they'd be painted as soft on crime. So they became apologists for this ugly issue. And now they're beginning to rethink that. I think David Kaczynski wrote it very well in the New York Times yesterday, saying that politicians now no longer fear that they will have to pay if they stand up for their principles.
Yeah.
And some of them are not just standing up for their long-held principles. Some of them are changing their
minds. Are actually changing their minds.
Yes.
Or following the sea change of American opinion.
And
either way, it's good news, isn't it?
And in an odd way, the situation with Terry Schiavo has brought these people who kept insisting on a right to life.
The sanctity of life.
The sanctity of life. When you have Senator Brownback beginning to say, maybe I have to take another look at this issue.
Yeah, was it Sensenbrenner or somebody else?
It was the senator from Pennsylvania,
whose
name I can't come up with right
me
now.
Me either. That's all right.
But a hyper conservative.
A very conservative. That
who said, maybe I've been too harsh on this issue.
That's right.
And maybe we ought to reserve it for the worst of the worst, which is what we've always claimed we've done.
Yeah.
But of course, it's not
of course
the truth.
It's not the truth. Yeah.
So I think we're seeing people, and perhaps it's as you suggest, they're beginning to read they've got their fingers in the wind too, and they're beginning to read.
Right. I'm going to let you go now, and of course you're too modest to say what I'm going to say, was that part of the credit also goes to groups like yours, Mike, because you've labored long and hard. This group has grown to a tremendous size. You do tremendous work here in California and all over the country, really.
We do.
And so you deserve some of that credit, too.
Thank you very much.
But now you got to go to work.
Okay.
So go enjoy your dinner.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've been talking with Mike Farrell, the president of Death Penalty Focus. here in California.